Hey everyone, welcome back to We're Live, Pal. And speaking of being back, guess who's back? One Andrew Zarian. Andrew, how's it going?
Hey man, yeah, I'm back. I heard what you said. I heard you say I may or may not have lost internet.
It was a conversation that producer John and I had. You know, he knows you better than I do, so that's why
he does. He knows me really well. He has everything to blackmail me, this man. I was at a farmhouse. We went to a farmhouse in Pennsylvania in like Amish country, and it was unbelievable. We had a great time, but we got a bad storm on Tuesday and I had no internet. It was just terrible. It was like 1 meg up.
Yeah.
So I don't think I could have done the show, but you guys did a fantastic show. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, Ryan Drosty, Kyle, the boss, Kyle Ross, those guys.
Yeah, they were great.
Very nicely. Hey, so I don't know, how much have you talked to your fan base here about your hip thing? Like, what's going on with the hip? People want to know.
So, yeah, I brought it up on Observer Live on Sunday, and I thought I had discussed it before, but I guess I didn't. I think I said it on Mattman, but I fractured my hip. It sounds way worse than it is, but it is actually not that great. I fell about a month ago, maybe a little over a month ago, and it just like I deteriorated. Like I could barely walk. It was getting really bad where I my last day at work, I ended up having to take a $200 Uber back home because I just couldn't do the walk. And I went, you know, the next Monday, I thought I pulled something. I went and got an X-ray. They sent me for an MRI. I did the MRI. I tore a bunch of stuff on my left side. I got a hairline fracture in my hip. And then they discovered I have a bunch of arthritis in my hip that they actually want to do surgery on to like shave down the bone. The ball that goes in the socket, as far as I can understand, they don't want to do anything on me until, you know, the swelling goes down a little bit from the fall. But I'm going to start doing some physical therapy next week and go from there. But man, I took a bad bump on my side and look what happened.
Well, you know what Vince McMahon would say? He'd say you need to get the surgery, because if you don't get the surgery, you won't be able to do heavy squats anymore.
I can't do heavy squats anymore. No, those days are gone.
But so,
I don't think people should be listening to Vince's advice.
Right. No, not at all. Not at all. We're not going to segue quite yet, because we are going to talk about Vince McMahon. But A, want to make sure, you know, hope that you are on the mend. I'm happy to hear that, you know, you're sort of working through this. It sounds like a kind of a frustrating injury to deal with.
It's so frustrating, dude.
B, I'm not going to let you get away with the $200 Uber statement, because that was kind of like a humble brag. Like, oh, $200 Uber. You just kind of threw that out there. A little bit of a humble brag.
I didn't pay for it. I didn't pay for it.
Even more of a humble brag. There we go. I like that.
But no, you know what I will brag about? I will brag a little. This tan that I've been working on for the last 2.5 weeks, fantastic. That's all I can do. I just lay outside. I send you Speedo shots. I'm laying around in a floral Speedo, and I'm like, check this out. Look at my day.
I do get those Speedo shots. He is giving me ammo against him, like producer John here, if I ever need to use it.
I'm working on my main event tan, my friend.
So if you want to, you know, we'll take questions and comments and such if folks have them. I think it's hashtag WLP on Twitter. And
ask those WLP. Will go to Duke
U. I'm sorry. Yeah. Ask WLP. All right. So let's talk about Vince, because on Friday, which is the day after you record Mattman, but I'm sure you talked about it on Wrestling Observer Live. The latest story in the Vince McMahon situation came out from the Wall Street Journal. And in this story, they talked about the NDAs and how many of them are out there. And, you know, so it's just a lot more for the public. But it seems like the reaction from the public has been lesser than with this story. When that first story came out, it seems like people were talking about it. But this one just kind of went away. And I was kind of wondering what you thought about it. Like, did you expect this story to have a little bit more legs than it has so far?
You know, let me just say this. I think the first story, if this story was the first story, especially the $7.5 million deal the payout that Vince had with a alleged former professional wrestler in the company, if that was the first story and it was worded exactly the way that it was, this would have been even bigger. Unfortunately, that first story kind of went away for a little bit for a lot of people. I think Dave broke down some more details with you on Saturday when you guys did Observer Radio, where, and I didn't know this, that Vince had met that person in his apartment complex because they lived in the same complex, and she wasn't an employee when the relationship began. So right. That kind of changed that story around as far as, you know, not public perception, but as far as media attention goes. I think once a lot of those details came out, you know how it works. I mean, listen, you have a tremendous background. You've been covering professional wrestling. You are a fan of radio, and you get it. And obviously, you're close with Dave. You get it. Once, you know, there's a piece to the story that doesn't fit an easy sell, it disappears. And I think that's what kind of happened with this. I would say that the second part of the story is much larger than the first.
Yes, I agree with you.
As far as the accusation part, but it does surprise me. Yes.
Okay, so what do you think? Now, I asked Dave on Wrestling Observer Radio if he thought there was going to be more to this. And I don't know if he necessarily answered the question to say explicitly, yeah, I do, or no, I don't. He kind of said, well, those are the NDAs that they have or that are out there. What would it take, do you think, for the public at large to really grab onto this story? Because there is something here that I think the mainstream media just sort of excuses is a bad word. The reason why they don't cover it is because of this thing of, it's just wrestling. It doesn't really matter. Yeah. And Vince McMahon, he has both benefited from that attitude, but also when it comes to, you know, being big time entertainment, that has been used against him. In this scenario, it is definitely used for his benefit, because if this happened in the NFL, in the NBA, Major League Baseball, there would be a bigger outcry than there currently is, because right now, according to the public at large, when it comes to this story, it's just wrestling.
I mean, just think about it this way. If it was Roger Goodell, you know?
Yeah.
Would this have even escalated, like, to the point that Roger Goodell stepping down as the commissioner and is now working on the sidelines as something else? That would never happen. You know, I this is a great example. I have a friend. He works at a large media publication. When this broke, do you know what he sent me? He didn't send me the article they were writing. He wrote, is this real or is this just wrestling? About the Vince allegations. And I have to tell you, you know, the media has gotten burned so much with, you know, kayfabeness and carniness of pro wrestling. I swear to you, I think some of it is maybe that. Maybe that it's just wrestling turns into, well, is it real or is it not? I'm not going to waste my time getting worked.
You know, this is such a complex
especially
subject.
If you don't know wrestling, if you don't know Vince, you don't know wrestling, you know, you don't know any of this. You just know that it's wrestling. I was shocked when he messaged. I'm like, yeah, of course, dude, it's real. He's like, oh, OK, I didn't know. It just came on my desk. You know, he just saw the email or something. But
so you remember when the speaking out allegations started to happen where, you know, Twitter was abuzz with the hashtag speaking out. And I remember doing a Wrestling Observer Radio with Dave, and he reminded me of this recently, and he said, well, how can you have this discussion if you're not talking about Vince McMahon? Now, I think the only public thing that was out there about Vince was the thing that happened with the massage therapist. That story is out there. You can Google that. But the Vince stories have been around forever about, you know, these types of things and who was getting pushed and not, like, you know, we didn't have concrete evidence like we do with an NDA, but these stories have been out there forever. And like, that's also a part of this, which is, I wonder if this stuff had come out during that time frame when there was more awareness or people really wanting to get that word out back then. I wonder if that changes the trajectory of this story. And I wonder if in this scenario, the fact that it is a couple years later is to Vince's benefit again, because people aren't really paying attention to this when, you know, he probably should have been the person who was brought up the most during that speaking out point when that happened.
The settlement came around the speak out, around the, you know, just the whole speak out movement, right? I guess maybe prior, when was it, 2018? The Me Too movement was happening already, right? Wrestling right. got it a little right. bit later, but the settlement came in the height of Me Too more than anything else. You know, 2018, I don't know when the conversation started. I would imagine that negotiation went on for a while, but 2018, he settled for $7.5 million. I absolutely right. I think if this was exposed around that time and somebody came out and spoke out at that time, it would have been a much bigger deal. I think this is going to be a big deal regardless. I do not think he's going to go unfazed. And it's, you know, like as people are discussing, it's business as usual. I'm hearing that too often, too many times from people in WWE. So it really makes me feel like that's kind of like what people have been told to say. Oh, it's business as usual. You know, we're just doing TV and everything is downplayed. But when your chairman and your CEO is accused of coercion of a sexual act, right? Let's ignore the first NDA. Let's forget about any kind of, consensual relationship, right? I don't want to fill in the blanks, but we actually do have an answer here. And apparently in the NDA and according to the person that got the settlement, this was a coerced act that he did. And that's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the part that makes it into such a big deal. But now you'll never know. This person settled $7.5 million, got a payout, and the odds are that they will never speak out about this.
So not that I'm comparing this in any way to the R. Kelly scenario. The only reason I'm bringing this up is because I just recently read a story on the R. Kelly situation. There is a woman who signed an NDA back in the mid 90s. She was much, you know, she was probably a very young woman at that point. And now it is many years later, and she went on the record to speak to a journalist. And I think the reason why maybe she's a little bit more comfortable is because, you know, R. Kelly situation is he's in a lot of trouble. So I agree with you. I don't expect anybody to come forward in this situation unless, you know, maybe there's some thought that he's in, you know, he's in really a bad position. But I do wonder, now there are people who have not, I don't know if there's anybody else out there, but if there is, and more people do come forward for whatever reason, I think that would be where the public at large and, you know, some of these websites and, you know, the National Enquirer, I don't even know how powerful the National Enquirer is anymore, but those types of magazines will jump on. If there are people out there who are willing to come forward and be like, yeah, like this thing kind of happened to me, or maybe even people seeing what these numbers are and like, man, like, you know, this happened to me. Why didn't I come forward? Like if somebody did and they were related to the wrestling industry, I think that's what it would take for anything really to happen here. But you know this just as well as anybody when it comes to like how things get in the New York Post or, you know, we're, like you said, we're big Howard Stern fans from back in the day. And, you know, Donald Trump would use Howard Stern's show to get the word out about things he was doing. And then, you know, so there's like a gameplay here and a strategy and a blueprint about how to either minimize or raise the levels of this stuff. What do you think it would take for something else to happen to Vince than what has happened so far, which is essentially, you know, it's everything's happening, you know, at WWE that's always been happening. So nothing has changed.
You know, I here's something else to think about, right? I'm still not clear on this. Was that first accusation that came out, that first NDA that came out, was the alleged accusation from the friend, I guess, right? It was from a friend of hers, a concerned friend.
You're talking about the very first one that had come out.
Yeah, yeah, the paralegal.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and read it. I don't want to misspeak. Okay.
I wasn't clear on this, but it seems like this is the what's being said is that after his relationship with her, John Laurinaitis picked up the relationship, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or was that filling in the blanks? I didn't know. I thought maybe she changed departments. I don't know. And that's what I said on Mad Men, and I got a lot of crap for it. I'm like, I don't know what passed down to means or whatever
the word was. The way it was written, in the only way that I could think of it is Vince was like, hey, John, I'm talking to this, you know, to this person, or I'm having a relationship with this person. You should have a relationship with this person.
I mean, that's gross.
That's literally what it sounded like.
So at first I took it as he was moving her. He moved her to John Laurinaitis' department when he didn't want to deal with her or that's how I read it. But maybe that's not the fact. And if that is the case, that's kind of gross. That's very gross. You know, like what's going on with those two? What's their relationship like? I didn't imagine John Laurinaitis and Vince would. It is so weird. The whole thing. It just. I mean, I know he tried to be discreet. I know they. But listen, at the end of the day, if you're doing nefarious stuff and you're doing something like this, it's going to come out.
To your point, they believe that something is wrong with that scenario as well, because who has gone from this equation right now?
John Laurinaitis. Yeah.
He's gone. You know, he's the scapegoat here. But if they didn't think anything was wrong with that first story, I don't think anything would have happened to him. But there's a lot of people reading into that, as you and I did, about what that really was. And then you're getting into like weird sex cult stuff, right? Which I'm not saying that's what it is, but
that's where
imaginations take themselves to.
Yeah.
And thus, go for it.
And I haven't, and maybe this is a little bit like, I got a lot of negativity towards this because I'm not reading it beyond what it says. Like, I'm just going to read whatever it says and that's it. And you guys could determine whatever your opinion. I have my opinion on this. I think it was gross.
Worded like that for a reason, right? Like,
of course it was.
There was no effect.
They didn't want us. Another word.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's another word for to make you see what's happening. You know, I think there's too many of these. I'm not shocked that there are, you know, to tell me that this guy has not slept with colleagues or I would say that that's an impossibility, especially
and they're not colleagues because he's the boss.
He's the boss. Everybody. I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah.
Everyone reports to him essentially. Right.
Yeah. What makes me curious is the response from people from within WWE when I spoke to them about this. And there is a very big sense of downplay coming, mm-hmm. not just from, you know, people higher up in the chain, but also just, you know, some talent, I would say. There's a sense of downplay. And maybe that's self-survival. Maybe, you know, you're trying to. You don't want to shake anything up. You don't want to say the wrong thing because you might be fired. I don't know. But
yeah.
I can't imagine another company where the CEO has this type of accusation against them or you know, corporate misdeed or whatever it is, you know, whatever we think. I can't imagine any other company standing by the CEO. When you have, you know, it's not an accusation, really. It's more facts. They have all the facts in front of them. They've seen the NDAs. Everything is in there.
Yes.
The accusation is in there. His side of the story is in there. Everything is in whatever they settled on. I said this happens quite often. I've seen this happen in companies I've worked with.
Oh, yeah.
I think we spoke about it off the air. I'm like, this is an NDA in a relationship between a boss and somebody, you know, a CEO and somebody that works for the company, very common. I wouldn't say there's anything nefarious behind it. Most of 5% of the time, 99% of the, this is a common thing. You're doing it to protect you and the person that you're in a relationship with. You don't, you have to generally let the board know you're in a relationship if you're at that level. I don't think any of that happened here. I think this is just, you know, Vince and his legal team being trying to protect themselves. But, you know, if someone is screaming coercion here, it's not, it's there's no NDA that's going to make you look good. If that's right. The case.
Right.
Just very wacky stuff.
Yeah. Like, you know, I think unless there is another story that Wall Street Journal is working on, or maybe somebody else is working on, I kind of wonder if it just ends here, unless, like I said, somebody else steps up. Because the one thing that I think could be a little bit of a tipping point for Vince is if it was a wrestler who we know who was part of this, who is a, you know, sort of popular or semi-famous wrestler who comes forward and those allegations are not good for Vince. I think that's what it sort of would take for this story to get bigger. But ultimately, as it is, I mean, you could see the public outcry for this isn't nearly as big as it was the first time. And it does look like, based on what Vince wasn't on TV on SmackDown or on Raw. I don't believe on Raw, but they pulled him back a little bit. So maybe there's a, like a, okay, like there, you know, we need to be a little bit more conservative on how we're flaunting this. But from what I understand, like, it was backstage, everything was normal. Nothing was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that, I think, what was it, after SmackDown appearance, he said, F him, when he went back into Gorilla.
Yeah, that's what Sean Ross Sapp reported, I think. But I think that was after the first time, the first story, one, right? Yeah. After the first story, yeah. He's a pretty brazen guy. The one thing I will say is sort of related to the company culture, the company environment. If you are... You know, if there is a female superstar or even a male superstar in a sense that is uncomfortable working there and, you know, wants out, like, I don't know what Sasha Banks's situation is right now. Like, we've heard all the stories about, you know, maybe her lawyers are involved and such, but this would kind of be the time to be like, look, I'm not comfortable here. Like, we have a head person who's been doing some things just culturally are improper and immoral, and I want out. Like, that, this would be the time to do it, I think, because they're, you know, that would also increase a little bit more awareness. But I don't know yeah. how that happens, because, you know, you're talking about folks whose careers are sort of involved in this, and, like, I don't want to see WWE go down the tubes in any way, like, just because of Vince. Like, because there's so many other people who have jobs and have careers and have families. And, like, I don't want to see those folks be hurt in this scenario. But, you know, he is the leader. You do sort of sign up for some of this stuff when you agree to work for WWE. So that's the part of this that, you know, makes me a little conflicted.
And you know, it's, at the end of the day, it's wrestling, right? And you see how certain people talk about Vince McMahon. Every one of these interviews, Vince McMahon is like my father. Vince McMahon is like my father. He's like a father figure.
Creepy, man.
Vince McMahon is like my father. And I'm, you know, up until
you
now.
You know who never says that? Shane.
Shane never says this man is like a father to me. But you know what? Hogan, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Ultimate Warrior, right? It doesn't matter. Kevin Nash, Scott Hall. It doesn't matter when you're doing these interviews about Vince and you were in on top of the business, you will always Steve Austin, another one, right? Vince was like a father to me. Bret Hart's always comes to mind on how hurt he was that he was like a father. It is not, that is not just, you know, certain people. This is a top, essentially, this is the company's mantra.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And, you know, that is, he's always been like that with his top guys, right? He's really, really catered to them. And I'm sure, you know, the relationships were strong there. But okay, enough talk about Vince. We had to cover it. We hadn't had a chance to talk about it. Let's move on to some actual in-ring. So AEW has a show on Wednesday, like they usually do, Fyter Fest Night One, and there's some interesting booking, and it made me wonder. And we'll I'll talk about the WWE side of this in a second too, but it made me wonder when it comes to the building of young stars. Now, one of these matches is John Moxley versus Takashita, and on paper, this match is tremendous because if you've seen these matches with Takeshita, he's great. Like I didn't really know too much about him before he came to AEW, but I had lots of people tell me like he's the real deal. He's like excellent. And watching him, I'm like, gosh, it's almost like they undersold him. But he's working with the interim champion in John Moxley, yeah. So you know I'm almost sure he's going to lose this match. And then on the other end, you have Wardlow against Orange Cassidy. And in my mind, and this may be a old school mindset, like I just want to see Wardlow crush everyone. And I'm not sure he's going to crush Orange Cassidy because Orange Cassidy still has some gravitas with this fan
and
base.
But he's on a big run right now.
Yes. And
he's more popular than ever. Yeah.
Like it's really interesting booking in, you know, how are we getting these guys over? And then now let's compare it to WWE, because I asked you this offline. I said, you know, do you think this theory push is for real, or if it's just to sort of set up, you know, the big guys to crush somebody? And similarly with Liv Morgan, right? Like you have two young folks in WWE who actually look like they have a little bit of room to grow in a company that has a real bad problem with making stars. Like, what do you see the different sides of this? Like how AEW is building these really competitive matches. Do you believe WWE really is going to utilize Theory and Liv Morgan? What is your sort of idea on how both companies are trying to create young stars?
I think AEW definitely has the advantage here because we haven't seen these matches happen 400 times. And also something that AEW has done really well is not make a nothing match feel like nothing. Right? A Wardlow versus Orange Cassidy, right? If that match was on Raw, you would know Wardlow's winning. He's not going to lose to Orange Cassidy and you're not going to think about it. But because it's AEW, you haven't seen missteps a lot when it comes to these matches, you're more intrigued with the match. So I think they'll always have, and it's also way newer, right? 3 years versus what? How many years? How many times are you going to watch AJ Styles and The Miz?
Personally, AJ Styles went to I'm never going to watch that match, but they're going to book it until we're old.
Until forever. Usos versus The New Day. They're fantastic matches, but how many times are we going to see this? That doesn't really exist on the AEW side because they're still trying all these things and it's always a new mixed bag of talent. But with developing new talent, I think AEW right now, you know, they've done a good job with Wardlow. They have something really special with him. Orange Cassidy is once again coming, you know, he cooled off a little bit, but I think since his Ospreay match, there's a little buzz here. They also have a nice flock of really young talent.
But at what point,
Dante Martin, they have so much young talent there that they could do something with in the next 5 years. I think WWE right now, between Liv Morgan, Austin Theory, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're the actual young folks who are, you know, there are other folks who are kind of getting a push here, but they're not necessarily young. Like Matt Riddle is not Matt Riddle in you know, he might be older.
36, 35.
Yeah, I think he's older than you. So Theory and Liv are actually... how old is Liv, by the way? I don't know how old she is, but I know Theory's in his like mid-20s, right?
Liv is 30? 28.
Okay, yeah. I think that fits, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, I don't want it to be like Wardlow and Orange Cassidy aren't like, you know, right out of college either, but they're just not overexposed. So maybe overexposed is the better word rather than...
Overexposed and... You also have to think about the injuries, right?
Yeah.
Look at all the injuries we've had with the late 30s in the 40s, right? And AEW suffering the same injuries, same issues. A lot of these guys, they wrestled hard and they took a beating and, you know, things are happening. WWE has the same problem. A lot of these guys are a little bit older and they've worked harder a harder style over the years and their bodies are waning down. You got to create these stars, because what are you going to do if Cody's out and Brock doesn't want to do it anymore and Roman gets hurt and another and just one other person getting hurt? You're done.
Yeah.
You just you just took out your entire main event for the next 3 years. You
I mean,
have
that's
to
what
develop.
They should be really worried about that. I mean, it's a great point.
And AEW should also. AEW should also. Think about it, right? You got Moxley, you got Danielson, you got Punk. You know, these are guys that have wrestled a very hard style over the years. And the, I mean, Jericho's still a top guy, but he's coming towards the end.
Jeez, gold record.
Adam Cole, he did get a gold record. Good for him, man.
That was so cool.
Yeah. It's a childhood dream.
Awesome.
He did it.
You know, it's funny because they were talking about how, you know, he's got his naysayers in music as well, you know, because of his start or whatever. But do you remember the beginning of that band when they were the, like, the mock band, Fozzy Osbourne, I think they were called?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were a parody band.
Yeah, yeah. To come from there to where he is actually a great story. Like, I would love to see the, what is the old music docs that the Behind the Music or whatever, VH1 Behind the Music, remember that back in the day? I want to see the Fozzy Behind the Music, because I think there's a great story there as far as, you know, what Jericho learned in wrestling and people saying no to how he used that in music. And he always wanted to be both. He wanted to be like a giant wrestling star and a rock star at the same time. And I'm sure the wrestling people would probably had told him, like, you can't, like, you have to pick one and you just have to go for it. And he was able to do both. It's actually a really tremendous story.
And he has a following at Fozzy that never watches wrestling.
Yeah.
A lot of those followers have nothing to do with Chris Jericho, the wrestler. They just enjoy Fozzy.
Yeah. And you know, when we're going back to this, like, underexposed or younger, how to push someone who's younger, you know, the number one in the entire wrestling business right now is MJF, and he's on TV right now. Like, he is, you know, there. The under the 25 and under or whatever that list is, he's the number one. Like, he is the top person on that list when it comes to young stars and sort of the future and who you want to build around. And it's almost like, I kind of wonder when it comes to AEW, in some scenarios, I think it is probably not the best to have so many young people you believe in. Because if there was, like, let's say instead of, you know, we could probably name 10 guys who are on the cusp of doing something there. If you only had three, you could just shoot one or two of them to the moon and not have to worry about the other eight. I think that's that's kind of a hard balancing act for a booker. And that's something that's, you know, I wonder if that's Tony Khan's whole idea for Ring of Honor. He's like, I have all these young folks and I can't push all of them at the same time. So let's push some of them in ROH and we can push some of them in AEW. But I'm sure it's a great problem to have, but it is also a problem.
Well, they need an identity, right? Ring of Honor is going to need a new identity because they can't be the same Ring of Honor they were leading up to, you know, it ending, essentially. It was
no,
great,
if they were, then it would just go out of business again.
Yeah, well, and that's not a knock at the talent at all.
No,
or,
not at all.
Or you liking what they did. I loved what Ring of Honor did.
Yeah, it's just the business
because they got replaced. They got replaced. Ring of Honor got replaced by AEW and NXT, and that was it. That was the kiss of death. So what is Tony going to do with this? I agree with you 100%. This should be some sort of growth promotion for talent that you want to maybe rehab a little, right? You could do a rehab program with these guys. You could do dream matches on there that you maybe don't want to do on AEW TV that kind of build there. Like a Cesaro match in Ring of Honor, I would love to see that. And you have the talent that it could go back and forth, but the main purpose should be for Ring of Honor is to develop the next generation of top talent in pro wrestling, because that's always what Ring of Honor has been. That is, historically, they have been developmental for WWE and anybody else. All the people that came through that promotion are, I mean, just the list goes on and on. It's so many top stars in the industry. It's unbelievable. So if you continue that version of it and create a feeder system, this should be their NXT more than anything else.
That's an excellent comparison. And I was just going to ask you about that before you said that. I almost wish that Tony didn't feel the need to sort of dual book these things at the same time. Because I think he could have brought ROH back in a much bigger way than he did. And I looked at the NXT.
I don't think he could have, though, Garrett. That's the problem. The TV thing has been a snail.
Right. That would be the biggest. That would be the biggest thing. But I think the way that he did it felt very rushed. And I would have liked to see it presented as, you know, here's this other company. We bought it. There's so much prestige. You know, we're going to create this X, Y, and Z. And it was almost like he was doing all of this at the same time. He had to book that WrestleMania show. And maybe that was the problem, which is if he didn't have that show, he could have waited. But so here's what I was going to say about the NXT comparison. NXT told their viewers from day one, these are the not ready for primetime players. You cannot do that because you immediately tell a specific wrestling fan base who's only interested in the biggest stuff and the most important stuff. You already told them not to watch. And So ROH, it can be a version of NXT, but it can't just be NXT. You can't have a company where guys who have been on AEW TV as mid-carders are now all of a sudden the top stars in ROH. I do think you have to separate. I think you have to blend in a much better way so that you're telling the ROH fan base, some of whom are going to be AEW viewers, probably the majority, you have to tell them this stuff is important too. This is not unimportant and we're just putting it on TV. So I think that's the difference. And I hope that they have a pay-per-view coming up. Depending on what our schedule is like, because I'm going to be off for the next 2 weeks. I know you want to do at least one show in between the 2 weeks that I'm gone. But they do have a show, a pay-per-view, and I think that show needs to be a big deal. They signed a giant tag team match, which I think will draw very well for whatever that fan base is, FTR against the Briscoes Part 2. Like, that's going to be awesome. And that might be the reason for people to buy alone. But then on the other side, if it's Jonathan Gresham versus somebody who doesn't even get on TV in AEW, I think that is a problem. Yeah.
So here's the other thing, right? And you actually, it's actually really funny you brought up. That has always been WWE's mantra. NXT is are for the people that are not ready for the big time. I was at NXT. I forgot what that last Brooklyn show I went to. It was Gargano and I think it was Cole, right?
Yeah.
And I went out for a couple drinks with a couple people from WWE, and they said that. They're like, you know, this was a great show, but this is, you know, we were just having a conversation. They essentially said the same thing. These guys are not, this is not a TV thing. These are just for wrestling fans. And I go, these guys put on one of the best matches I've seen all year, you know, whatever year it was. I'm like, you're telling me they're not ready? I'm like, you can't tell me I'm wrong in this. This could be a main event match on a Raw, and it would still be a fantastic match. But you're absolutely right. I think the big problem here with Ring of Honor, they have to do something at this point. It can't just be mid-carders facing Jonathan Gresham. The other thing is, I would hope that there's some sort of guidance or announcement at this show regarding what the future of Ring of Honor is and their TV positioning. Because, you had that show in April. I know everything was kind of happening and the ball was rolling, and maybe that Warner Media deal didn't happen with Ring of Honor immediately. But now you've had X amount of months. You could announce something and say, you know, in October, Ring of Honor's back on TV. In September, we're back on, you know, we're going to be on HBO Max if that happens.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do something with this brand. It can't just sit there and you run a show once every couple months.
Yeah,
it's not going to do anybody benefit.
We did get a comment. I don't know why it didn't stick on the screen, but from Zantastic, will ROH on YouTube work?
I would say no, because we saw AEW on YouTube, and what did Minoru Suzuki and Brian Danielson get?
Yeah.
Yeah, it got what, 100,000 in its peak?
Not as much as like Brock Lesnar destroying everybody, you know, at the end of SmackDown. We had another one from Redmond Survivor, who says, are Warner Discovery working on a joint streaming service? And I mean, the answer is we don't know. Like, I would bet not, because they, you know, they seem to be pulling back rather than creating, you know, more possible losses.
But they have it. They have Discovery Plus, right?
Yeah. That, I mean, they've that already has... they already got rid of CNN Plus. That was like immediate. The day they almost the day they signed that deal, they're like, nope, this one's out. We're not spending any money.
That thing
on
was
this.
Hemorrhaging. It's funny. I'll tell you off the air. I know someone that worked there, like for the business side of CNN Plus. It was doomed. Like, they knew at launch this thing only had a couple months of leg. Okay, so here's a great example. Discovery Plus, they have A&E. Wow, that's a conflict of interest, no? they have A&E, History Channel, Discovery, TLC, IDTV, Animal Planet, OWN, Lifetime. You know, these will... I could see this eventually getting absorbed into the HBO Max hub. Because I don't know if... You have HBO Max, right?
Yes.
It's fantastic. I love it. And if you go to the bottom, there's like a little hub that tells you all the different brands. AEW could be there. Very easily, and it could be under the Ring of Honor umbrella. Ring of Honor could fall under the AEW umbrella, and now you have a platform for this, and you have all the archives of, you know, whatever. They got to probably have to remaster some of this, but you got 20 years of Ring of Honor footage. This is one of the best long-term business concepts that Tony has had, because it gave him assets for the value of his company. He just, I mean, I know it's separate, right? They're separate. And Ring of Honor is very separate than AEW. I think that's how they position. But it still gives you assets that you didn't have in the past, and 20 years of professional wrestling that you pretty much control the beginning of every top guy in the business's career. You know, that's a tremendous asset to have. And I think it was smart for Tony. It's just now getting on TV or getting some sort of distribution for the platform. It has to come.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to the last thing here. I just have a couple of quick hits for you. We'll just go in order here. I wrote them down. The G1 starts this weekend. This is sort of like Candyland for hardcore wrestling fans, just to have almost a show a day. You're locked in. You're following this tournament. The last couple of years, because of the pandemic, I think the anticipation has been lesser. Now there's four brackets this year, which means, you know, maybe you won't see your favorite match or the match that you've been looking forward to. There's only one AEW talent. By now we thought maybe there would be more. What is your interest in the G1 for 2022?
Less than it was last year, and I had lost some interest last year.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's a good year for... Listen, the whole territory in Japan is the pandemic really deflated New Japan for me. And they've done the best that they can, I guess, with coming back. But, you know, there's still issues. The fact that it's going to be limited attendance, how many people are they going to have there for the G1 now? Because you could clap, you could right. cheer,
and so, they're going to do a thing in what in the early fall where you could cheer, but they're like only letting fall, half of the people in the building, so they're not even coming back. Like, you know, they're doing this in a very like subtle, you know,
phase process
phase, yeah, the, phase.
But you know, they're what are they, a year and a half behind every other country with this? And I get, listen, whatever, it's. Different cultures, different people. I get it. But as far as watching it, yeah, a lot of it is taken out of me. They have had some unbelievable matches, but this year's G1 really doesn't have the attention. And I think a lot of people went into it, and this was the feedback I got from people, and I didn't have this. It was, they thought you would have Danielson and Mox in the G1, and they had all these crazy expectations of who's entering the G1 because of availability and the relationship between New Japan and AEW. But listen, traveling is still a pain in the ass, and things aren't totally wide open still for a lot of people. So I don't think they're going to get it. Maybe next year we'll get the G1 that we want to see, but it's really been lacklustered for me. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
I'm with you. 3 years ago, I was pretty fired up you know, I was like doing the thing where, you know, I'd work and then I'd go grab lunch, and on my lunch break, I would have my phone and just watch matches, you know, and skip through the entrances and make sure that I could see the good matches. And I'm sure I will do some of that this year, but it'll probably be more in response to someone saying, hey, watch this match. This was great. And I was like, okay, I got my New Japan World, you know, subscription. I'll pop it in. But I am not as much looking forward to it. Some of it, though, I will say, you go back 3 or 4 years, we didn't have so much wrestling on TV as we do now. And, you know, now I think of watching more wrestling, and it kind of gives me a little bit of a stomach ache, you know, just because we do so, we watch so much, just to even keep up with the business, right? Because that's kind of the reason I don't watch as much wrestling as I do, because I just love watching pro wrestling television. I watch it because I want to keep up with where things are going and the business, and to do these shows with you and with Dave and with John LaRocca. Adding more hours is a little bit of a bargain that I have to make. You know, I have to, because then it takes
so hard, man.
A couple of hours away from something else that I probably need to do.
Listen, you and I have very busy schedules. And I think we share the same passion for pro wrestling. I think it's pretty comparable. We're both very much into the things that we're into. I don't even think I could add another hour of wrestling to my life. Like, I have to remove something to add another hour. So, yes. Like when it comes to the G1, yeah, you know what? I was one of those guys that would wake up in the middle of the night to watch it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to do that this year. Listen, I want New Japan to do so well. And I really hope that once, you know, this year is over, maybe they just get back to, you know, full swing of things and really the territory heats up. But it's not a hot territory as much as it was.
Yeah.
AEW replaced that for a lot of people.
All right. AEW is announcing next week information about their next pay-per-view. So on Fyter Fest week 2 or night 2 or however they call it. Do you have any insight into what's going on with All Out? I mean, I think
they're in Chicago.
Assume it's Chicago again, right?
same building. Now, same building, yeah. Okay. As far as I know. I mean, I could be kayfabed in this. Yeah, I mean, but everything I've heard, it's same building. They already announced that the meet and greet, right? The fan access is going to be in, what is it? What is the town called next to it? I like to call it Schlossberg, but I know that's not the name.
Schaumburg?
Schaumburg. Thank you. Thank you, John. Schaumburg. Yeah, they announced that the fan access, whatever they call it, is in Schaumburg. So I can't imagine they're doing the fan access in Schaumburg and then they're running the show at the United Center. You know, it won't work like that. So I'm nearly certain it's Now Arena.
By the way, I think I got that wrong. I think they're announcing pay-per-view stuff tomorrow, not next
tomorrow.
Week. So yeah, it'll be tomorrow. All right. So, cause there was questions about, you know, about that. And I think you've been pretty solid on that answer about that. You think it's in Chicago. So, all right. Next thing. I don't know if anybody is following this or I just find it funny, but the ESPYs, WWE has an award voted on by the fans for the moment of the year. I think they are down to 4 moments, and okay. I think fans choose somehow online. And so I wanted to run these by you and okay. As somebody who has watched, you know, as much WWE TV as most. What is your
I don't
your
know these
moment?
Moments, by the way.
I don't know what they have. I'm going to give them to you.
Okay.
Okay, now I don't know exactly, because some of these happened late last year, and the rest of these happened this year. But
okay, do you want to give your moment outside of this also?
I'd have to think about that. Well, I think my moment of the year is probably in these choices here. I'll give them to you. You tell me. All right. Okay. First one, The Undertaker is inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. That one right there would not be in my top 10, by the way. And that would not be in my top 10.
No,
you know, I'm just not the biggest Undertaker fan. And I think that WWE Hall of Fame is just, it's not that big of a deal anymore. Okay. Next one. This one is in the top 2 or 3. Definitely. Cody Rhodes returns at WrestleMania.
Big moment. I agree with you.
Giant. Okay.
Giant moment for them.
Stone Cold Steve Austin stuns Vince, Austin Theory, and Pat McAfee at WrestleMania.
Can I tell you, I would take that. You just hit my moment of the year. But it wasn't. It wasn't him stunning everybody. It was Vince crumbling. That was a omen of what to expect for the rest of the year with WWE and everything that's happening. You know what? I would say that is definitely a huge moment too. Austin coming back, having a match, stunning, you know, everybody. Vince. I mean, listen. I know we're talking about him. He's not everybody's favorite right now, but he looked impressive when he, you know, took his shirt off. And when he came out, he looked impressive. When he took the stunner, he looked like an old man, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. His legs folded in a way that I didn't think. Like legs shouldn't fold like an accordion, right? Like legs.
You know what it was?
There's not that many.
You know when they use the steel chair and sometimes like they waffle it so hard that it just like crumbles?
Yeah.
That's what happened to his legs. It just got rickety and it just crumbled into pieces. It went sideways and forward at the same time. Didn't know you can.
All right, and the last one here is Big E cashes in the Money in the Bank briefcase and wins the WWE Championship. Was that late last year or was that early this year?
I think that was early this year.
Okay, so maybe it is all in the 2022 calendar.
Maybe not.
Year.
When did Big E win? One of our producers will know. MG Geek could mess with me.
Oh yeah, it was last fall. Moment. It was last fall.
Okay, so I at the at the time it happened, I thought it was a great moment. I thought it was a big moment, and then they really didn't run with it. And obviously, Big E got hurt, and that was a detriment to his run and his push. I put an asterisk on that one.
So
it could have been. It could have been a huge moment.
Yeah, it should have been a huge moment. Not a fan of the baby face doing the cash in when the champion is all, you know, dazed. Kind of like the Liv Morgan thing. That's why I didn't like the Liv Morgan thing that much. I wanted Liv Morgan to go, Rhonda, I'm giving you a week, challenging you for this world title on SmackDown, and I'm going to beat you for it. Because that's what a baby face would do. A baby face doesn't take advantage of somebody who's been beat up or has got a bad heel. But I know, I get it. They just want moments on these pay-per-views and they want people to feel like, you know, that they got their $10 worth or whatever in moments. And I feel the same way about the Big E thing. The Big E thing should have been one of the biggest moments in recent memory for pro wrestling. And it just wasn't. It was like they wanted to catch you by surprise and, you know, they wanted to have a Raw thing. But the way, you know, him actually winning that title, he should have similarly challenged for it. They could have built it up for 4 weeks and then boom, he wins and he's a champ. That would have made that moment better for me.
You know, okay. You talk about Big E. You reminded me of something and I'll be really quick here, right? And it's patience with somebody. When Big E won that NXT title, right? And he comes to the main roster, he comes in as an enforcer for Dolph Ziggler, right? They don't really do much with him. Yeah, he has
Big
an IC
E Langston.
Run, Big E Langston. They put him in a doomed trio. That was a doomed. The New Day was a doomed program from the beginning, but they made it work into something that was so special. And WWE will take credit into knowing and having foresight. They had no foresight with this. They gave them a ridiculous gospel gimmick. For purposes that we could assume WWE writing and why they chose these three for a gospel gimmick, right?
Yeah.
And they took that terrible idea and they made it into something that connected with not only just regular the hardcore fans, it also connected with youth, with the kids, with adults, with women, with men. And it just showed the talent of these guys. But with that said, Austin Theory comes to mind. Like, Austin Theory may not have the best character right now with the selfie stuff, but you don't know where he's going to be in 10 years.
Yeah.
You don't know where any of these guys are going to be in 10 years. And the thing about pro wrestling is we quickly forget the terribleness when the positive is so good. And I think that's the story with Big E and also Kofi and Xavier also. You know, we don't think about that beginning days of the New Day. They were just... Yeah. They transcended into something unbelievable, and that's pure talent, and that's unbelievable. But I think, you know, as far as Austin Theory goes and all the other younger guys that may be in crappy gimmicks, sometimes you're able to rehab that really quickly.
Yeah. All right, so I think we both agree the Austin one out of those four is probably one with the Cody one, like, right behind it. And I think just because Austin is the still a giant star. I think that one will win. All right, last thing, real quick, because we only have a couple minutes before Lance starts yelling at us. Did you watch any of the A&E stuff from Sunday? The Undertaker doc and then the Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels rivalry stuff?
I saw pieces of the Shawn one. I didn't see the Undertaker one.
Yeah, me too.
The Shawn Bret one I saw, yeah.
And, you know, I think I liked the way that they put it together. Now, of course, I haven't finished it, so the story, you know, we'll see what happens about the story and sort of the truthfulness behind it. But they put some real effort into these documentaries. But I wonder, and this goes back to what we were saying earlier with how much time do we have to watch this stuff. They put these things out on Sunday night, and the last thing I want to do on Sunday night is watch wrestling.
Watch right? More wrestling.
Sunday night is like, okay, hang out with my wife. You know, we're going to watch some TV and maybe have a glass of wine before we start the week on Monday, right? Before we're back in work and you start the week all over again. I don't know. I don't know about that night for watching WWE docs. If I watch it, I'll sort of catch up, you know, maybe in the middle of the week. But that's fine. I find that Sunday night to be not a great time slot for me to watch stuff.
Dude, it's so funny. That was my exact scenario this Sunday. I wanted to watch the HBK Bret stuff, you know, because I'm always Montreal is always fascinating. That dynamic was fascinating. So I was like, hey, listen, I'm like, you want to watch a documentary? She's like, I got a documentary I think you're going to love to watch. I'm like, oh, man, maybe she saw it because I had it on the TV. And she's like, what do you want to watch? And I'm like, I want to watch that Shawn Michaels Bret Hart thing. She's like, no, we're watching the 86 Mets.
Oh,
we
watched
the 30 for 30. That's old awesome. 30 for 30 because she hadn't seen it.
It's great,
by the way. Fantastic. And it is all true. And it just shows you the degeneracy of living in Queens. You know, those guys represent the whole neighborhood. But she had no interest in watching this. And I get it. But yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. 100%. Like, I don't want to watch wrestling with my wife, you know, on a Sunday night.
So, you know, the book, have you read the book? At the documentary? The documentary wasn't really built off
of the 86
book,
Mets. Yeah.
The Bad Guys One by Jeff Pearlman.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know that. You know, he's the same writer who wrote the book on the Lakers, which is the Winning Time series.
Yeah. So, fantastic. Yeah. Both fantastic fantastic books.
Yeah, both
great
books.
Great story for both teams.
Yeah.
You know, both franchises. Great story for those 80s, 70s, I guess 70s for the Lakers, right?
Late 70s. It would have been late 70s and then throughout the 80s. But all right, we're going to end it here. We don't need Lance to send us negative tweets.
He sent me a text yelling at me the other day.
We're actually a little bit early, so maybe he'll send us a text going, good job, guys. Way to get out on time.
I was going to say our timing was off. We have to learn our timing in the ring. He started yelling at me about something at, on Wrestling Observer Live the other day. I get those Monday morning. Every Monday morning, I get just a paragraph of all the things I'm not smartened up on.
He's listening, man.
He's teaching me.
Yeah, he's teaching. All right, that's it from here. Like I said, I'll be out for the next 2 weeks. Andrew will be holding down the fort at least for one of those weeks. You can follow our Twitter and Andrew's Twitter, and we'll make sure that we alert folks when the next show is going to be. I'll be back in those 2 weeks, and then I'll be back on the show. So, So for Andrew, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.